That's the unmistakable voice of Faith Evans, known as the First Lady of Hip Hop. At 35 years old, she's been through more than most folks will in their entire lives. Faith was raised by her grandparents in a house full of children, foster children, and other relatives. By the age of 4, she found her first adoring audience in her church. By 15, she was climbing out of her bedroom window to go learn how to record and mix music. 3 years after that, Faith was a college dropout, a songwriter, a single mother, and the survivor of a brutal and abusive relationship. By 24, she was a successful singer and a widow. Now Faith Evans is telling all in her memoir, Keep the Faith, starting with the death of her estranged husband, the rapper Notorious B.I.G.
Basically, my life was changed in a matter of seconds. And I think that's pretty much how I did sum it up in the intro. I mean, before I even describe what I was doing and, you know, what he was doing. But, just in a matter of seconds, you know, my life as I knew it was changed. I mean, I had to very quickly put myself into gear to know that I had a lot of work to do. I mean, I had to kind of just be strong for a lot of people. And, you know, the funny thing is that I wasn't with any of them that night, but me being his only beneficiary that was an adult, you know, the next of kin. God, you know, it's just amazing how things, you know, how he aligns us and puts us in places at certain times. And there's always a reason. And, nobody ever expected that would be the outcome of that particular evening. But there was a reason I was there. I mean, and, like I said, I just kind of had to put on a brave face and get ready to handle a lot of things.
When you realize that you are a widow and you're also a mother, also a songwriter and a singer, what did your vision of your life become in that period of grief? What did you see ahead for yourself? Did you see anything ahead for yourself?
Wow. I mean, to be honest, I couldn't even, I was in such a cloud. I mean, everything is a blur. I mean, my friends still remind me and walk me through certain times after then that, you know, you don't remember we were all here and doing that in the hole. And I'm like, I don't remember. I mean, I think I can't even tell you how long it was before, you know, I was able to even think about functioning as, you know, as an individual, as far as what I had to do for me. Recording, I wouldn't record. The only thing that I did was, you know, take my kids to school every day, you know. But other than that, I was completely in a big cloud.
Let's back up a little bit from this moment, which was not just a private moment, but it became a very public moment, like Tupac's death, where all these people were grieving. Mm-hmm. You know, here you were, a young widow and a young mother, but you were raised in a family that, like so many, was a network of people who you may not see as, you know, the traditional, you know, mom, dad, two kids, car, dog. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you grew up.
Well, my grandparents raised me. When they've been foster parents for as long as I can remember, and I was actually the first child other than their own that they actually took care of. They raised me since I was 6 months old, although my mom lived there as well. She was always, you know, raised me as well, but I lived in their house. I always kept myself around something musical, whether it was being in a play where I played the drunk daughter or sneaking out to the studio to make a, you know, demo that never became anything. But, you know, it was all a part of what I felt I needed to do beyond, you know, that house and beyond church. You know, I was always looking for something to do outside of that, of those four walls.
In this book, you talk about some really rough times you went through, being held out a window by an abusive boyfriend who threatened to drop you to your death, being beat up, being manipulated. Why do you feel that it was important to put all that in the book?
Well, it's a part of my life, you know? I mean, I couldn't possibly do a book about my life without sharing the important experiences, because although they weren't positive ones, you know, or fun things to go through, or But they all serve a purpose in the person that I have become. That's something that I'm glad that I have, you know, learned to grasp. But I think that the things that I have experienced have enabled me to be able to be like, okay, you know, just kind of shrug things off and know that, okay, there's something better. I think that those things have made me who I am today, which I'm very much at peace with that person and proud of who I've become.
And you're a businesswoman. You talk very honestly in the book about having to sort the finances out, the tangled finances of the estate. And one specific thing that comes to mind for me is there was that incredible hit song, I'll Be Missing You, mm-hmm. That Sean Combs did. Were you guys benefiting from that? Was your family, was your son actually able to get some of the money that came out of that project?
Excuse me. Well, that was actually the only reason that I decided to do the record with Puff, because this was still at a time when I just kind of shut everything down. I had been working on my second album prior to Big's death, and I didn't go back in the studio until he called me and asked me to do this record. And the one line that, you know, that got me and hooked me was, all the money is going to go to the kids. All the royalties will go to CJ and Tiana. So, yes, they do have trusts set up where the royalties from that song go into that trust.
What is the thing that you're most proud of that you've done as a writer and a recording artist?
Most proud. Wow. I think I'm proud of the fact that I didn't even really, you know, when I actually got my record deal with Bad Boy, Puff heard me sing one line, and I wasn't there in any capacity of auditioning or anything. I was just the baby's mama in the lounge, and my opportunity came. I mean, and I didn't even think it was that. I mean, you know, I had been around several people, and that, like I said, most people would be singing at the top of their lungs, you know, trying to get discovered. But I kind of always played my position and, you know, like, well, when something is meant to happen for me, it will. And I went in the booth to sing one little line and, excuse me, Mr. Puffy, can I change it around? And I just did my little magic to it. And as soon as I walked out, he wanted to sign me to his new label. I mean, and I know that was nothing but the work of God. That was nothing but, because I still had to drive back home with the people that I drove there who were trying to get signed as producers, you know. As a writer, I think the fact that I was able to, and I wouldn't call it a fluke, but, you know, I didn't plan on being, you know, writing on these projects that I was on before I actually was showcased as an artist or singer. But it so happened to be that Puff was working on so many projects, from Total to Usher, Mary J. I mean, things that enabled my name to be a part of things that were monumental. And I'm a person that reads credits. Even before I had anything to do with anybody's record company, I always read the names on albums and stuff for some reason. So it's just funny how my name, you know, that ended up sort of being part of what I did. You know what I mean? Now I definitely read them to make sure my name is where it should be.
That was singer Faith Evans. Her new memoir is called Keep the Faith. She joined me at our NPR West studios. You can watch video of this interview on our blog, nprnewsandviews.org.